Okay, hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response midday for the ninth day of Kislev, and this is a tshuva that I already started recording, and then something went wrong with my quarter, and therefore I'm going to have to do it all over again. So if I sound like I'm saying something that I've said before, it's because I am. So today we're going to see a tshuva by Cook from Shut Da'at Kohen, Yene Yeredeya, from the response of Da'at Kohen, which is about Yeredeya issues. This is response number 18. It's from the ninth of Kislev of Tough Reish Sadi of 1939. It means, by the way, that I might say things that seem to be very, very clear, and I will say them more briefly than I usually do, and therefore this might be a much shorter shiur than usual, just because it'll feel to me like I've already said it. So, he's responding to a man who's writing about the custom in Tzfat. In the city of Tzfat, they had a long-standing custom that when they shechted animals, when they slaughtered large animals, like cows, for their meat, they would check the brains of those large animals carefully. In halacha, let's remember, there's something called a trefot. Trefot are injuries or blemishes that happen to an animal that in the time of the Gemara were thought to be life-threatening, were assumed to be life-threatening. Nowadays, we just follow the trefot that are in the Gemara, and it's a whole question. The Rambam already raised the issue. We just follow the trefot that are in the Gemara. However, we have a leniency in general that the only trefot that we check for carefully are on the lungs, and that's how you get the whole idea of glatt kosher, is that some people check the lungs. Nowadays, most people check the lungs even more carefully than the original standard. But the standard of checking carefully only applied to lungs as a matter of custom. It's only applied to lungs for a long, long time. There is a trefa in the brain that you could have worried about. And so in most places, what you do is you open the head of the animal, you check the brain casually, not all that carefully, and then you throw out the brain and you don't worry about it. You assume that there was nothing wrong with the brain, and that's by the way, I think, why we don't have sweet breads that come from brains, because we don't, like Jews, don't generally have kosher things that come from brains, because there's this trefot issue. So in Tzfat, they used to check the brains carefully. The codicil to that, I don't know if that's the right word to it, but the added piece to that custom was that for a long time in Tzfat, the only animals that came for Shechita were animals of non-Jews. And what would happen is the non-Jew would have the animal shechted. If it turned out to be a kosher animal, he'd sell it to Jews for more money and therefore make an extra profit they hadn't expected. And if it turned out that it wasn't kosher, he'd sell it as regular meat as he expected to. And to him, it wasn't a big deal. And therefore, they had this custom of checking the brains more carefully because they didn't matter, because it didn't matter to anybody. By the time they're coming to Rav Kook in 1929, on the ninth day of Kislev, so the custom has changed, the practice has changed, and now it's Jews who are in business for selling meat, and so for Jews selling meat, when they shecht the animal, they're expecting to get the kosher meat prices. So there, to them, it's much more significant a loss if the animal becomes non-kosher, meaning theoretically you could have had Jews who go into business expecting, using a business model, the same business model as non-Jews, and therefore that would matter to them, but that's not what's going on. So for them, the hefsed, the loss, the financial loss, is much more significant, and therefore they want to know if they can find a way to go back and follow the halacha, as the halacha was originally, Paskin was originally ruled, that we do a casual check of the brain rather than a full check of the brain. So Rav Kook says there are fundamentally two reasons that we could imagine allowing a custom to be changed in the kula. One reason is you could say there's a financial pressure here. And maybe you could say that when the original custom was only a stringency, it wasn't the halach as it had to be, it was a stringency. So therefore you'd say, maybe we're allowed to therefore change it. That would be possibility A. Possibility B is you could say that maybe we could argue that the custom never applied to Jews' animals. The custom always was a custom that only applied to non-Jews' animals. So in the first case, the question of financial pressure and that it's now harder financially, so Rav Kook says it seems like there's no way to allow for that leniency. Now he presents a story in the Gemara in Pesachim that I've seen many poskim use in a way that I find personally uncomfortable, and I apologize that today I'm going to editorialize a little bit. My email is grothst@gmail.com. If you want to complain to me that I am not qualified to editorialize, you're obviously right, and therefore you don't need to write it, but I'm happy to hear from you to enter into this conversation about when I feel the need to talk about these things. So Rav Kook, first let's talk about the way that it's generally assumed that the halacha goes based on the story in Pesachim. The story in Pesachim is, in Nun Amud Bet, Rav Yochanan was approached by some people called the Bnei Baishan. The Bnei Baishan were people who were the descendants of people named Baishan, it seems like, or maybe they lived right there, but they had a custom not to go from Tzor to Tidon, which is in Lebanon, but from Tyre to to Sidon. It's a fairly short trip, a trip you can easily make in a day, but they wouldn't do it on Fridays. They wouldn't do it on Fridays. It's a chumrah to be worried about travel. It would be as if, and I know people like this, there are people who say, well, I don't travel afternoon on Friday. It would be, if somebody would say, listen, I live in the Poconos and my commute is generally 90 minutes. Fridays, I don't go into work because I don't want to get into trouble. It would be something like that. So they had that custom of not traveling on, not traveling that distance, of a distance that is not a matter of halacha. It's a matter of an extra stringency to be very careful not to get caught somewhere for Shabbat. And they wouldn't do it on Fridays. They're, now it says Atu Benayhu. It could be their sons, it could be their descendants, their grandsons, their great grandsons, but it's some group of people from that place, from that family, came to Rav Yochanan, probably family and place, came to Rav Yochanan, and they said, our forefathers could do it, meaning they were rich enough to do it, they were financially able to live with that stringency, and we're not. And Rav Yochanan says, your forefathers have already accepted this upon you. Shma b'ni musar avicha. The pasuk in Mishnah says you have to accept the discipline of your father. That, and that becomes a halachic assumption about customs. There's a lot to talk about it. We're only going to talk about it in terms of this case here. There's a lot to talk about how much that's connected to place, how much it's connected to family, how much it's connected to whether or not you think of it as a halach, as they killed the halacha was that way, or they just accepted a stringency. Here it seems they just accepted a stringency. But it seems like, even though the forefathers were able to hold it up financially and the descendants or the children feel that they can't, nonetheless, Rav Yochanan doesn't see that as a place to be matir, a place to allow it. And therefore, that's going to mean here too, the fact that financially it's very, very difficult is going to be a big problem. Not only financially very difficult, but also the idea that it's a difference between Jews' animals and non-Jews' animals. So that's because of the greater loss. And that greater loss is going to be a problem for us to allow these kinds of things. So here, let me just throw this a tiny little bit. It seems to me that there's empty spaces in that story in the B'nai Baishan. We're going to get to some of those empty spaces coming up in something Rav Cook is going to say about the Jewish animals and non-Jewish animals as well. But let me just say here that I don't know that if the B'nai Baishan, Akin Rav Yochanan, were now literally starving, because let's say the business had changed such that all the business is done on Fridays now. If they don't go from Tzor to Tzidon on Friday, they're going to lose all or most of their money. Would he have said it then as well? It could be that he would have, but it's not clear in the story. Meaning, it seems to me the story is as plausibly open to the idea that, let's say, the forefathers were making $1 million a year, and therefore they didn't feel the need to go from towards Sidon, therefore they didn't. But the sons come, and they're making, you know, I don't know what the number would be. Let's say they're only making $800,000 a year. So there, I can easily imagine, you could say, you know what, you have a custom of your forefathers, this is not enough. So I just wonder whether or not Rav Yochanan meant it. It's generally assumed by posts. You've seen other posts who don't think in the way that I'm thinking right now at all, and I am not a posting. So I'm not saying my view really has standing. I just, it's my tape, so I get to say things if I need to, and I apologize again if I'm offending people in advance. But it seems to me there's room to question how far Rav Yochanan would have taken this, and that knowing the full story would have been helpful in this situation. Another example that comes up right now, because he says that if we had ever known that people had made, and the people in Tzfat had made a distinction between Jews' animals and non-Jewish Jews' animals, so even though most of the animals came from non-Jews and they had this custom, but if we knew that if they ever brought Jewish animals, they didn't have the chumrah for the Jewish animals, so then we could say that now that the situation has changed and it's primarily Jewish animals being used, we can follow their custom because their custom never was to be machmir about Jewish animals, and therefore we can follow that. But once the custom was blanket in a universal way to be machmir, even though it was non-Jews' animals, the fact that it changed is not enough, he's saying, for us to say, oh, then we're allowed to change the custom, because the story in Psachim shows that we can't get rid of customs because of a change in conditions. Now you might say, he says, well, it's not quite the same thing, because I'm trying to say there's a change in the situation from non-Jews animals to Jews animals, and that there are other areas in halacha, which he doesn't specify here, but there are other areas in halacha where we do make a difference between non-Jews animals and Jews animals, which is how we pass in halacha on these things. So you might say that that's not the same as other changes, meaning, yeah, let's even say we accept the Rav Yochanan rule that a change in circumstances does not justify a change in custom, but it could be that in issues of isur v'heter, that would be different. And So he says, I'm sorry, of Isser v'Heter of non-Jews versus Jews, that would be different, because you could say that when it comes to rich and poor, we don't see a difference between that in terms of how we paskin halacha in questions of Isser v'Heter, and therefore we would say that we had to assume that the custom applied equally to the rich and the poor, and that the custom accepted by the forefathers is still binding upon the poorer descendants. Rav Kook says, I don't think it's true, because we do see a hefresh, a difference between hefse meruba lemuat. We do see a difference between a significant loss and a minor loss. And therefore, if you've got to say to me that changes of circumstance that are significant in other areas of halacha can be significant in terms of change of custom, you should say the same thing here. Now, I hear that and I think to myself, well, maybe that's true. And maybe when Rav Yochanan was dealing with the Bnei Baishan, it wasn't yet a hefsid meruba. And I don't know that from the story. Again, it's the way the poskim have taken it, and I'm just wondering about it. Meaning, and his example was, let's say we ever knew the Jews had dealt different, that it had been dealt differently with Jews' animals. But here's the question. In Safad, let's even say we knew of a case. This is 1929. We knew of a case in 1922. They had a bunch of Jews' animals, and they brought those animals, and they still checked the brain. But I could easily imagine to myself, saying to myself that, well, but there, it wasn't yet the common practice. So if a Jew who bring in that reigning situation, in that situation where the general practice was that it was non-Jews animals that were brought to Shechita, and a Jew brings him in, he knows what he's doing, and therefore he's accepting in that moment the loss upon himself because it's an odd circumstance to occur. But if it overall changed, it's just unclear to me why the postmen are so sure. I'm not saying they're right, wrong at all. I'm just saying I don't understand it. And this is another good example of it, that he gives the example of Hefsid Merupa, and yet it doesn't seem possible to him that the case of the Bnei Baishan case was where it wasn't yet a Hefsid Merupa, that it was a loss, and they felt like they couldn't stand it. But maybe they really could stand it. Maybe that's why he said you have to continue the custom. I find it hard to imagine, for example, that if they were literally starving, he would say to them, sorry, got to keep the custom, because then you'd be making the custom more serious than lots of other things in halacha that we push aside for issues of pikuach nefesh and stuff like that. So Rav Kook does say, it's clear that if the forefathers had been mostly rich, but there were a few of them who were poor, and the poor ones did not... Sorry, the other way around. If it had been true that we had seen some distinction between rich and poor by the forefathers, then we would have allowed it for these later descendants, because they are now poor. So he's assuming they're really literally poor. When they say to Rav Yochanan, we can't live up to the standard, it means because they're poor. But when Rav Yochanan says no to them, it's apparently because Rav Yochanan is assuming that the forefathers just had you made it unequivocally an acceptance by themselves not to do it. And so the fact that they were rich doesn't change. Now, again, that's a problematic to me. It's a problematic reading of the story as well, just because it sort of assumes, because of, and applies to the poor children as well. And it seems to me an odd thing in terms of what we're assuming about the forefathers and their intent when they accept customs. Meaning, you know, and we have a whole category. It doesn't come up real quickly. I don't think it brings it up, although he might, and I might have forgotten that he did, but I don't think it brings it up. But we have a whole category of neder, that somebody takes a vow for themselves, that we're fully aware of the fact that they might not have realized all the circumstances that would ensue, and if it's later circumstances that ensue turn out to be the kinds of things they never intended, we have a thing called Hatarat Nedarim. So it seems odd to me that we take this one story of Yochanan Bnei Baishan to ascribe to the forefathers such perspective and such awareness of how the future could look, that unless they make a condition, we assume it to apply to absolutely every situation. When we wouldn't do that with a vow they took upon themselves for themselves, it's just an odd set of circumstances for me. But that's the way it's read. Mimkein gamenino didan, on a situation as well, since there was no established leniency about Jews' animals. So again, if I'm living in 1872, and every animal that's brought before me for shechita is a non-Jews animal, and the non-Jew could care less. Right, if I say to him, listen, this is a kosher animal, I'm happy to buy it from you for more money than you expect to get, he's excited about it, and that's why he's willing to bring it to me as the shochet. But if not, he didn't expect that, right? He brings all his animals to me for shechita because he doesn't care how it gets killed, and there's a chance he'll win the lottery and it'll be a kosher animal and it'll make a lot more money. So I say, great, so I'll check the brain. It gives me an opportunity for an extra stringency. But then it turns out, and my point is that the people involved might never have realized what they were doing. it'll turn out that they're going to obligate all their future generations to have this standard of kashrut, even if the finances of it change and even if the practice of it change. So now it's Jewish animals rather than non-Jewish animals. And it's something that I struggle with. Maybe that's why this response to him caught my eye. Now he tells us where it is in halacha that we've seen a distinction between Jewish animals and non-Jewish animals. When your day, Yud Zion, the discussions of a mesukenet. A mesukenet is an animal that seems to us now in danger of dying naturally, and we don't want it to die naturally because then it'll be non-kosher. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh min ha-goanim shekatvu, that it's only a behemat Yisrael that you're allowed to shecht once it's mesukenet, because you're trying to avoid the loss of it becoming a non-kosher animal, and you want, but... And then I think it's actually the Torah who says, and it's very magim, it sounds right, Shikar davar midat chasidut. Because the whole issue is a midat chasidut. And a midat chasidut means the word Professor Trisky, Alav Shalom, was supererogatory. It's going beyond one's requirements. It's an extra stringency one is accepting upon himself. Tzvot Shor says that. So then you might bring that, and then he says you might bring that and import that to here, where there's a Rashi in Yevamot Kuf Yutet. So he says that sometimes you think of it as midat chasidut, but sometimes it's that you're worried that there's an actual Torah prohibition, any Torah prohibition, and that you're worried about a Torah prohibition. So here too, says Rav Kook, we don't know about this chumrah with the non-Jews animals. I'm sorry, he says this chumrah, the idea that non-Jews animals might have less chumrah, less stringency to them than Jews animals, that might be only by a mesukenet situation. More stringent by non-Jews animals than Jews animals. Mesukenet, an animal that's in danger of losing its life, because that's maybe only a harchaka. It's a midat chasidut. It's an extra stringency we took upon ourselves that doesn't have any real halachic standing, meaning there's no halachic requirement to check the brain with a mesukenet, to have an animal that's in danger of dying. It's not a treifa. It doesn't have any actual wound that leads us to believe that it will die. And therefore, there's no halachic reason we can't shecht it. When it came to non-Jews animals, we got this idea that since it's mesukenet, we think it might already be in the process of dying in some sense, and therefore we're worried about it, and therefore we don't want to shecht it, and therefore we don't shecht it. But that's a complete extra stringency that doesn't have solid roots in it. It's got solid roots in the idea that I can imagine what the reason is that I'm doing it, but there's no actual prohibition that requires me to do this. But in cases where I'm worried that maybe it's a treifa, so then if it turned out that it was a treifa, that's an actual Torah prohibition, and that maybe we'd say isn't a harchaka, isn't a distancing from sin, it's not a midat chasidut, it's not an example of supererogatory piety. It might be that it's an actual halachic stringency. So there, says Rav Kook, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to apply the idea that non-Jews animals are different than Jews animals in terms of how we treat them and how we're more stringent about non-Jews animals. And that would mean, therefore, that when it comes to the brain chumrah of checking the brain, we would need to actually think about and know what the original custom was. What's the original custom? Consider the midat chasidut, meaning logically you're not required to check. So when I go to check, am I checking just to be an extra good Jew? Or am I checking because I think there might be an actual suffix here? I'm worried about an actual suffix. So if we know that prior generations differentiated Jewish animals from non-Jewish animals in terms of the brain thing, then we would for sure be able to say, you see, it's not that they thought there was an actual problem, halachic problem here, because if there's an actual halachic problem here, there's no room to differentiate between Jews animals and non-Jews animals. If I think there's a halachic problem that enough animals are trefot in the brain, then I would have to worry about it, and then I would have to treat it like an actual prohibition, an actual problem, even if it was a Jews animal. But if I had any evidence that they only did it for non-Jews animals, then I would be able to say that they were doing it as a midat chasidut, as an extra stringency. And what's it doing as an extra stringency? I can say, yes, so the custom was with non-Jews animals to have this extra stringency, and then I could apply that today in their time and say, but I don't have to do it for Jews animals. Now, there was a tshuva in the Rush who said, which was quoted in the Torah Choshen Mishpat, who said that if you have a doubt about a custom, we're allowed to follow Torah halacha and not follow the custom. So that might have helped us like. He said, we have a doubt about whether the custom applies to Jews animals, and therefore we can say, let's follow Torah law. But Rav Kook says, no, you can't do it there, because there, Rav Kook was talking about where there was a doubt about whether there was a custom at all. It wasn't a question of whether there was a doubt about this custom, it was a doubt about whether this custom applied to this situation. It was a doubt about whether there was at all a custom. So that would be different Here we know there was a custom. We're just trying to find the extent of the custom. And if they're there, he doesn't think you can apply the Rosh's leniency to follow Torah law. In fact, he thinks it might go the other way, that once you have a custom in place, and this goes back to the issues that I've raised before, so I won't raise them again, but once you have a custom in place, that maybe then you're required to follow, that you're required to assume the custom applies to all the situations, even to Jews animals. So here he mentions that what I raised before, the custom sofer, in Yerodea Kuf Zion says that every acceptance of a custom is like a neder. So if it's like a neder, the reason he brings it up is that you can say that just like we paskin in nedarim, that a suffek nedarim is lahakmir. So that's true, meaning somebody makes a neder, and then they don't know if they meant to apply it to X situation or Y situation. We assume that they meant to apply. That's a halacha in nedarim, that suffek nedarim lahakmir, that when we have a doubt about nedarim, we are machmir in it. That will push aside the Rosh, and they're bringing it to the neder situation. But to me, as I said before, that would then mean that any time that we could have that it's a wonder to me why we don't bring up the idea that any time, or he doesn't bring up the idea, that any time that we have reason to think that the forefathers never would have meant to include this in their thing, that they wouldn't have included it, but they don't, so we won't talk about it again. Then one of the Maharshal in his commentary, the Chulin, does say that he thinks it's only a custom that was instituted much more formally than customs like this. So there are customs sometimes when a community will get together or a group of people will get together and they'll make a cherem. They'll announce where this is our custom, and anybody who violates this custom will be excluded from our group. So then he says, that's the Maharshal's claim, is that's where we say that suffik is to be, that we have to be machmir even on doubtful situations. But general custom just arose, even if a Beit Din established the custom, they just didn't establish it with a cherem. So the Maharshal says clearly, and this goes against the custom sofer who lived much later than the Maharshal, he says it doesn't have a din of a neder, and therefore that you can rule leniently on their suffik. And there are many poskim who follow that as well and say, therefore, on those these kinds of nedarim that just arose of custom that just arose, you're allowed to be much more makil about it. And he says, in Yerushalayim, when it comes to gasot, to large animals, we just do a light check and then we throw it out. So therefore, he thinks there is room to be makil. Because it's the kind of thing you could say, this was a custom that just came about, therefore it doesn't have the standard of neder, and it might just be a herchaka for mid chasidut, and all those situations allow us to say that if we have a doubt about it, maybe that didn't apply to this, and therefore we can be makil in the situation. Even though the custom so far seems not to have said that way. But then he says, but you might have thought, and this to me brings up halachic issues in many other cases as well, you might have thought that why is there a problem here? What kind of loss are we worried about? Right? We're just saying we'll check it more carefully. Well, if we check it more carefully and it's fine, then it's fine. There's no loss. If we check it more carefully and it's not fine, why should we be upset about that? We should be happy that we discovered a treifa and we're therefore not going to violate the Torah prohibition of eating a treifa. We're required to avoid prohibitions. And then he says, and I think this is a key, crucial issue, not only in Halakha, but in other areas as well, of the Yesh Lomar, Shayidea Bedika, when we check, Yimtzu Lifamim Reuto, we'll find problems in the brain, Ka'elu Shenitz Darech Lechmiya, that will require us to be stringent about them, Mipnei HaSafek, because we're not sure. Meaning, it's true. If we're going to open the brain and find a huge treifa, an obvious, simple treifa, that we should be happy about that. But now it has to be the kind that we wouldn't have seen with a general check. We'll see with a more careful check. But even so, if it's a clear treifa, then we're happy about that. And if it's clearly not a treifa, then we have no problem. We didn't lose anything other than the time we spent checking. But what's really going to happen, he says, we're going to find things that are an issue because we checked and we can't be confident that they're not the kinds of things that we don't have to worry about. We're going to end up declaring many more animals treifot than A, we need to, and B, than actually are, because you get into these situations. And therefore, sometimes it's better not to check. Now, I think that's such an important insight in treifot for sure, but it's insight in lots of other things as well. I think it's true. I think now that people are realizing it's true in medicine as well. When you check for every single thing in medicine, you find a lot of problems, and a lot of the problems that you find and start trying to treat create more problems, and you find more problems. And a lot of cases, it seems clear that those problems would not have been actual problems. If we had just ignored them, they never would have been an issue. So that's the kind of thing that he's talking about here, and that you get into problems when you check certain things. Therefore, he's saying, When I'm struggling to find a kula to allow these people not to check the brains of these animals, you might say to me, why are you bothering? There's no problem with it. The answer is, there is a problem with it. The problem with it is that once you start checking, you find things that you wouldn't have found otherwise. And so you say, well, the fine things you find are a problem. And the answer is some of the things you find might be an actual problem. Those ones we're not upset about finding. But a lot of things you find, you can't be sure they're not a problem. But in fact, they're not a problem. But you can't be sure of it. And therefore, you have to treat them as if they're a problem, even though really they're not a problem. And that comes up, as I said, in many other areas as well. And he points out that the Ramah says something very similar in a different case in Yerida, a different case of Trefot. He says that the custom in our city is to be mekel, when you have avazot, we have geese, that something gets into their veshet, which I'm pretty sure is the windpipe, but it might be the trachea. I never get this right. The cut in the veshet, or the trachea in the windpipe, so I think it's the windpipe. So you have something in their veshet. If it doesn't go through all the way through, meaning it doesn't make a hole on both sides of it, or there's no blood pooled and congealed outside of it, then we're makil about it. We allow it, we don't say it's a treifa. So the Ramah says the truth is it's a problem because it's a Torah prohibition of treifa. And once you've seen something that makes you think that it might be a treifa, it's not such a simple thing to say, well, we allow ourselves to ignore it. And therefore, he says, v'yoter ayatov, shelo livdo klal, v'li smoch harubot. You better not to check the veshet and to trust the majority situation, which is that they don't have things stuck in their windpipe, even from one side at all, rather than to check and then to be makil about it. Rav Kook says the same issue really applies here as well. There are a lot of times when it's better to not check, meaning even if when we checked, we would then say, oh, this is an issue, but we can be makil on the issue, but we better not check at all, because sometimes you're being makil, you're being lenient about it, or right the problem. And therefore, he says, that's what he thinks, and if the rabbis in Tzfat agree with me, I think you have room to be makil on this situation that you don't have to follow that chumra that you had before, because it was a midat chesidut. It was really done as just an extra, not an extra worry about actual prohibitions. It was just a way of being more stringent and more acting supererogatorily, and therefore you can assume that it only applied to non-Jews animals, or the Jews animals, as it would have been with a Mesukinan animal, and that would be allowed the Jews of Tzfat to now not have to check the brains as they used to, because in a lot of cases it's better not to check than to check and then have to rely on various leniencies. And that is a response of the day for the ninth day of Kislev. This is Gideon Rustin with thanks to Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, to the OU, David Hochhauser, for putting these shiurim online. Have a good day.